All right, I said earlier today on the earlier podcast, I'm not on this podcast tonight, but I'm editing it. So I said earlier today on the Sunday podcast with Davi and Ben, at the beginning I added something about how I was ending the email notification subscription for all my sites. I'm not doing that. I looked into it, and it was actually what I needed to do, and I would not have had the site down for 24 hours if I'd done this, no matter what CIA people had hammered away at the site, was I had to add a WordPress plugin called WP Supercache, and I'm going to put a link in the bottom here of how to configure that. So yeah, man, WP Supercache. There's also going to be a tutorial, video and audio tutorial, in my upcoming How to Set Up WordPress for Podcasting YouTube video, which will be out in a couple days. Or maybe tonight. We'll see how busy I am. How much rest I got today will probably determine that. All right, so here, enjoy this show with, I think it's going to be Diana and Derek J. Worms.
Hello, freedom fiends. Tasing you with liberty while calming the hamster in your brain. Obama's drones keeping you down? The freedom fiends have an iron shield for your brain. And it's made of liberty.
Right on.
That's Diana. Hey, Diana.
Hey.
I'm Derek J. Michael Dean can't be with us tonight. What's he doing, Diana? I heard he's rewriting episodes of The Twilight Zone. He's trying to get that old show back on air.
Yeah, I thought it was the Outer Limits.
Right. It's one of those.
Yeah, it's one of those.
Well, he'll be back one of these days after he escapes from a time warp. But tonight, we've got a lot to talk about in the realm of peaceful resistance. It's always my favorite topic. Plus, why Ron Paul is not cool. He used to be so cool, and he is so out now. Got all that coming up. Plus, like, Walmart. I don't know if you saw this story earlier this week, Diana, but Walmart has... It's typically known for the minimum wage jobs that it provides, but there's one Walmart store that pays 2.5 times the national average of the minimum wage.
No, I didn't. I hadn't heard that story.
Yeah, I'm almost ready to move. These Walmart jobs sound so good. So we've got a lot in that area that I want to cover. Plus, Costa Rica has no army. I don't know if you knew that. But I had heard that, but I never knew it was possible. Having all these discussions with military folks about, oh, well, we need a military. You know, Obama's drones keep us safe. Well, Costa Rica's been doing just fine without it. So I thought we could talk about that.
That's cool.
Yeah. But first, there was that tragic shooting at a Walmart in Ohio where a young man who's like a father of two, one baby on the way, he was holding an air rifle in a Walmart and the police came in and shot him. I don't know if you heard about this. He died. And the whole reaction outside of the Dayton, Ohio area has been somber. A lot of people upset, and there was one counter-protest held by a member of a group called Cop Block.
Right.
You're familiar.
Yes.
And they held some pretty awesome signs. They had their copblock.org t-shirts that say, badges don't grant extra rights. A nice sentiment to share, because if there were some other gunmen that weren't badged who had committed this crime, there would be a much more serious investigation into it. But,
Didn't one fella have a sign? He was holding a sign as well. He was also holding a toy gun and a real gun, and the sign pointed to the toy gun, and it said, "This is a toy gun."
Yeah, exactly. And I thought that was a beautiful illustration.
Yeah.
He had holstered on one side of his hip a toy gun, like a Nerf-style water pistol or something. And
I love those.
Yeah, the colorful orange ones. Are, you know, mm-hmm. you know they're safe.
Right, then, they look really dangerous.
Right. Well, that's a weird one because you know it's not like people couldn't paint their guns to be like neon green or neon orange.
You can get pink guns. I know this for a fact because I've looked for them. Yeah,
and they look like toys too. So it can be confusing for. Uh-huh. Law enforcers, they need to have maybe a special training. This guy was helping them with their sign saying, you know, fake gun, real gun. But there was another sign that said, toy guns don't kill people, cops do. Thought that was a clever sign. But one objection that I have to these folks out there was that they are... One of them was wearing a mask, and they all refused to give their names to the local media. Which is, I think, a huge oversight. If your whole... premise is about accountability to the public, and then you're out there in public making a statement, you don't want to give your name. It seems like they're missing the point about credibility and accountability. Is it just me? Are they within their right to just be like, hey, I don't want to give my name. I just have a message. I'm an artist representing words and images.
I think they're well within their rights to refuse to give their name and be interviewed. However, I definitely see your point about accountability. You know, if I'm going to be out there and I'm going to be, you know, protesting something, I mean, when you were talking about that earlier on your show, I was like, yeah, you know, I would totally give my name and, you know, I'm not scared of anybody. I'm going to let my light shine here. You
would
know,
you, have you ever done that?
I've never done that. So it's very easy for me to say, yeah, I would do it. You know, I would totally give my name. But given this, you know, if I were actually in that situation, I don't know, you know, right. because I...
What would hold you back? What would you be afraid of? What's in the back of your mind saying, don't do it. Don't give your name. There's people who are going to see it. You might have future employers, you know, who look up your name and then they see, oh, my gosh, Diana is pro-gun. I'm not hiring her. I mean, what sort of thought process do you have there?
It may, you know, if we're talking about people who currently have jobs, right? And they happen to be working for an employer that would frown on that outside activity. I'm not saying that I agree with that. I think mm-hmm. that what you do on your own time should be your business mm-hmm. And shouldn't necessarily have an impact on your employment. But if somebody has a job and they are relying on this job, you know, to you know, support their family, they may have a fear of losing their job because of that. I wouldn't, you know, and I mean, if their fear was, you know, getting in trouble with, you know, getting on some list or something like that, I disagree with that strongly. Like, please put me on a list.
Wow,
you know?
Really?
I kind of feel like that, yeah.
Why would you want to expose yourself to that kind of risk? Actually, you bringing up the concerns that you have about being public actually pushes me more towards that side of, like, privacy. Because, you know, why should these people give their names when their message is just as powerful without a name? It's not like they're politicians or elite intellectuals who have this name to throw around, right? That they're like, oh, I have this credibility because you know my name. It's like they're just regular folks, so the message is what's important.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you've completely changed.
Yeah, I've changed my mind. So good for them. They can stay anonymous. It was just, it's just initially weird, right? Because like when I see cop blockers in YouTube videos going up to the police, it's what's your name? What's your badge number? What's your rank? Mm-hmm. All of this collecting data about the public servants. And then here are these people out in public, and then they're wearing masks and concealing their identities. I mean, lame. I would think that what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And if they're going to hold others accountable, that they should practice what they preach and maybe lead by example.
Okay. Yeah. So where do you stand?
Well, I guess it's the decision of every individual, right?
Yeah,
but where I stand, I would encourage them to be public because they've got nothing to hide. And if anything, there are independent journalists out there like me who want to reach out to them. And if I don't have their name, I mean, one of the easiest ways to reach out to people now is through Twitter or Facebook. So if you hear of someone in the news, it used to be that you have almost no way to contact them. You have to go through the news agency or something. But now you hear a news story, and you can look up the person's Twitter and tweet right at them. Even celebrities or you know, the Facebook pages of these activists. Mm-hmm. You know, I would be able to access them and say, "Hey, you know, come on the show, come talk about what you do." Mm-hmm. It would. It seems like it would advance their cause to be more public, to have some personal accountability for their actions. If that's what they're preaching.
Yeah, one of the things that I think about is, you know, I'm still kind of a baby in all of this. You know, I really only came out as a, you know, I don't even want to say libertarian anymore. Initially libertarian, and of course, you know, the difference between a libertarian and an anarchist is 6 months.
Right.
You know, I don't even think it took me that long, but I started identifying as that fairly recently, and you know, had a little bit of fear of identifying that as that in front of my friends and family.
Why?
For fear of what they would think. You know, oh,
yeah, it's socially,
you
know, unacceptable.
It kind of is, but little by little, I've definitely come out more and more. And I have a Twitter account now, and I actually use the Twitter account more to kind of put myself out there as an anarchist. And Facebook, you know, little by little, I'm putting myself out there more, you know, and identifying more as, you know, here's where I stand. I think all of these things are really messed up. And, you know, police brutality in this country, you know, what this country does to other countries, you know, just, you know, that I totally disagree with, you know, with what's going on, you know,
that's
the way.
That's so in, though. That's so fashionable. That there's no friends or family who could disagree with that, right? I mean, everyone's on the police accountability kick right now. They're like, whoa, police brutality is out of control.
Yeah.
I mean, you're seeing it on late night TV shows, comedy shows, like places where you wouldn't normally see talk about police brutality. It's suddenly coming out everywhere.
Well, I have friends on Facebook that run the complete spectrum of viewpoints. So, you know, I actually have a cousin who's a police officer, and I love him to death, you know, and you know, I've never really talked to him, and I really want to now. An Oath Keeper?
Yeah, have you heard of that?
No.
There's an organization, it's pretty new, I think 2010 is when it was started, but it's an organization of people like him, perhaps, who are within law enforcement or military, but are interested in upholding their oath to the Constitution rather than just obeying orders blindly. And it might be a cool thing for him to take part in if he doesn't know about it already.
Yeah, you know, I do want to talk to him, and I do want to find out more where he stands. Like, if he had if there was a fellow officer that, you know, they were, you know, responding to a call, and a fellow officer used, you know, way too much force in dealing with the situation, you know, what would he do?
Would he arrest him?
Yeah, exactly. Like that, I kind of want to know that, because to me, you know, one of the things I hear is that a lot of people saying, oh, you know, yeah, I know there's a lot of bad cops out there, but there are also good cops. And I'm like, well, what do the good cops do about the bad cops? You know, what makes them good cops? If they're not holding their fellow police officers accountable to what they do, then they're just as bad.
Yeah, you know, that always never sat right with me when people would say, that's just a few bad apples, because I'm like, well, if it is a few bad apples, then I should be hearing about a lot more arrests of police officers for overstepping their authority, right? You wouldn't expect that.
Right,
My grandfather was a state trooper. I never heard of him arresting anyone. And I know he must have witnessed some malicious intent, some lack of accountability within the department.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a police overstep his bounds and then get arrested by a fellow officer?
Not me.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges.
This is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write worms in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Rare try.
So we're meowing along here on the Freedom Fiends, talking about Ron Paul. Not cool. Not cool, man. He used to be so cool. He was the coolest kid in class, in Congress. Just not hard to do.
That's interesting that, you know, I read this article, and a couple of days ago I saw where he was being interviewed and more or less came out as an anarchist.
Yeah, he's always been an anarchist. I think everyone, like all the ANCAPs or anarchists have known that because they listen to his terminology, the way he says, I'm for voluntarism, and there were subtle hints along his campaigns for that he would drop to say, like, yeah, sure, I think the government should take 10% of your taxes or none at all. Like, you know,
right.
It would throw in these extra words that would insinuate, yeah, he's for no government.
Yeah.
What tipped you off?
What, that he was an anarchist?
Yeah, why did you think that, why did you start to think that? Because you first assumed that he's just some regular Republican, right?
Oh, no, I never knew that. I mean, I never assumed that he was just a regular Republican. Definitely not. You know, just, you know, when he first started his runs for president, it was very clear he wasn't a regular Republican.
Well, when did you start following him? You said you're a baby to this libertarianism thing.
Yeah,
much of a baby if you've been following Ron Paul for a while.
Well, I've been following Ron Paul, but I'm not saying that I necessarily supported Ron Paul.
Oh, really? So you like knew yeah. of him, but you were like, I'll choose the fascist.
Yeah, unfortunately. Look, dude, I just got to say, I mean, I wouldn't be on here if I wasn't reformed, okay?
Hey, I hear that. I'm just poking some fun. You know, in 2008, I supported the fascists when I had heard of Ron Paul. But I heard of some other candidates who were like pro pot legalization, and I thought that was maybe that was something worth supporting.
Right. And, yeah, and we know how that went.
Yeah. Now, well, actually, I think legalization around the country has done pretty well. No thanks to the federal government, but
no, exactly. Yeah.
But it's unstoppable, right? Prohibitions just can't last. They don't work. Anyway, why did you say you're a baby to this libertarianism thing? What turned you on to it?
Well, I think that I always held those values. Uh-huh. Like, I think my whole life, you know, I've always, you know, bucked authority.
Yeah.
so to speak, I've always...
It's in all humans to be free.
Right, I think so too. But I do think that people, you say that, but then again, it's like why are there these people then that are? It's so hard to convince them that they're slaves.
Well, I think I don't know. So we could talk about that. I think there's probably a lot of social pressure, like what you brought up, where like you're posting stuff on Facebook and Twitter, and now it's time for your friends and family to react.
Yeah.
And so depending on that reaction, I think that's sometimes enough for people to say, you know, I don't care if what my friends and family believe is immoral and wrong. It's socially unacceptable to believe what's right. So I'll continue to promote what's immoral. I don't know.
Yeah. And that, you know, and that was me. You know, it was like I knew there was something wrong with the system. Like, I've always known that there was something wrong with the system. But I did buy into that whole great man fallacy where, you know, if we just get the right guy in there, that, you know, everything will be okay, everything will be fixed.
That's a tempting fallacy.
It really is. True. Yeah. And you know, so I voted typically, you know, and when I say voted, I'm talking, you know, in presidential elections, I would vote for a while, I would vote for the guy that I really thought was best qualified for the job. And then I started voting for the quote unquote lesser of two evils.
Yeah. Qualified and, how? And, when you were judging qualifications, were you looking, deciding like policy or who was the better bribe refuser?
The better bribe refuser.
Wow.
Well, no. When I say, I was just like repeating what you said because I thought it was funny. But whose policy that I felt would be the most effective.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, regardless of party, although, you know, I've kind of my whole life, I've sort of changed my mind about the parties that I followed.
What's your family saying? I have to know. Are they lashing out at you?
Not lashing out. I did have a conversation with my dad recently that was pretty hard.
Does he think you're crazy?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
Well, and it's not just because of this. It's because, you know, I'm 48 years old and I've completely flipped my life upside down in more ways than one. And
it's so not you that's upside down. It's the world that's upside down, Diana.
Right on. That's what I think.
It's everyone else who's crazy. Worms. This is the Freedom Worms. Fiends. You know, we're going to come back. I want to talk about a Christian family refusing to give up its farm.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squigelps from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Guns and Weed, Buy Sheep for Sheep on Jeep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Meow, meow.
Meow, meow.
Meow, meow.
Meow, meow.
Meow, meow. Yeah, freedom wins.
Cops getting arrested for doing the wrong thing. Hey, it actually happened, you know. A listener sent in a message to me over the break, Diana, that Donna Jane Watts made national headlines after handcuffing Miami Police Department officer Fausto Lopez while he was in full uniform and driving a police car.
Wow.
So she did it. Well, the unicorn that we said didn't exist is out there. Her name is Donna Jane Watts, and she's my heroine.
Sorry.
Yeah, so tell us
You said heroine.
Yeah, that's the proper term for a female hero. So tell us about this this family in Palestine, a Christian family that's trying to hold on to its farm.
Yeah, this is an article I came across last week. When I was looking up information on, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And this is an article that came from the BBCnews.com. And basically is this gentleman who had apple orchards and on a farm that or on land that has been in his family. He's a Palestinian Christian, and it's land that's been in his family for 98 years. And it is surrounded on all sides, and this is in the West Bank.
Mm-hmm.
It's surrounded on all sides by Israeli settlements. And suddenly, all of his orchards were gone. The Israeli army had come in and bulldozed them, saying that they were on the land illegally.
Illegal apple trees.
Yeah.
How could this possibly be? How could trees be illegal?
Sure.
Can you explain that for us?
And his whole thing is that, you know, he's fighting this legally. And you
well,
know,
that's his first mistake.
Well, you know, I mean, he doesn't want to use violence. You know?
Oh, well, yeah. Well, it's not an option between legal or violent. There are other options that are peaceful.
Right. Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah. But yeah, he's you know, he's got all his papers in order and everything. But, you know, they tell him, you know, essentially what's happened is that they hold, you know, they'll say, well, okay, so we need this from you, and he'll provide this. And then they'll say, and this is the Israeli government, well, okay, you've got that, but then we also need this from you. So they keep raising the bar higher and higher for him.
Right, so he can't win.
So, and yeah, unfortunately, ultimately,
they're stacked against him. It just seems completely. Like they've made up their minds. They want his farm. It doesn't matter what he does or what hoops he jumps through. They're going to take his stuff anyway. I mean, they already bulldozed his property. I mean, at what point do you give in to a bully and just say, like, hey, this isn't worth the fight? I mean, 98 years on this land, we had a good run. Let's just get lost. Let's let the bullies win. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people have done that. I think a lot of people in that area have done that, that they've tried to fight and ultimately, you know, were unable to win and they gave up, you know, a lot of times maybe because they just don't have the financial resources to do so. And so far, it seems that he does have the financial resources, but, you know, how long is that going to last? But he does continue to fight and, you know, and he's not giving up. And, you know, the thing that struck me about the whole thing is that, you know, a lot of people that are on the pro-Israel side or whatever, you know, they're, you know, they think that that it's a Muslim, you know, versus Jew kind of issue, that, you know, it's all about the, you know, these two religions. Well, it's a minority, but there are a lot of Christians in the region that are also being, you know, essentially persecuted, you know, by the Israeli government. And so it's that, you know, and I'm actually a Christian. So it was very eye-opening for me to learn that. And it's not, you know, and it's not just because he's a Christian that I'm, you know, like, oh, yeah, well, now I'm on, you know, the Palestinian side. Absolutely not.
Hey,
you know,
doesn't it help, though? It helps to have, like, some connection to what's going on over there. Like, I was talking about this on Peace News Now earlier today with a caller who was bringing up Palestine and Israel. And I said, you know, I don't see why I am involved at all. Like, I don't think I don't play any sort of role over there. I don't live over there. It doesn't make any sense for me to be involved financially or in word or action. So, like, why does this matter to you? Because an injustice anywhere is an injustice.
Justice everywhere. That's why it matters to me. I mean, it really does. You know, I have to admit that at one point I was very pro-Israel, and it was because I was buying hook, line, and sinker what the mainstream media was trying to feed me. And
But why were you pro anything? Like, what?
Yeah, that's just how I used to be, Derek.
I mean, it just is strange to me. These lands are so far away. There's almost no connection. Like, I have no connection to any of these places.
Well, the connection I actually have is that I, you know, my grandfather was Jewish. I mean, that was one connection.
Was he from Israel?
He wasn't from Israel, no.
Well, then, I mean, that's nothing. That's not a connection.
Yeah. And then I have other family members. I have a family member that works for, it's not a Zionist organization, but it is like a Jewish kind of, you know, get out the word kind of thing. And I think it's very pro-Israel. So I guess it is kind of Zionist.
Is this the farmer who's saying this? There's a quote on this BBC.com article. It says, I will plant more trees, double trees.
He says double trees. Yes. So, yeah, I mean, his
attitude.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his heart is very inspiring. You know, it's stories like this that are very sad, but at the same time, they're very inspiring. You know, it's like when I think that, you know, that the situation is just hopeless, you know, I read a story like this, and obviously, in the end, and we've both kind of agreed on this, that the cards are stacked against him, and most likely he won't win. You know,
why would he want to? I don't get it. If you're surrounded by bullies, and then you get to keep your property, you're like, yay! Now my neighbors are all bullies. Like,
yeah,
what do you win?
I don't know. I mean, I just think that. For him, it probably represents his family history, you know, his ancestry. He's very tied and attached to that. And I think, you know, there are a lot of people that are like that, you know.
I don't know. I can't tell people where to put their values. I don't value land that way. I mean, so what that his grandfather worked the land? It's all the same earth. Move on to another part of the earth. Your grandfather lived on that same earth.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, a lot of the Palestinians just don't feel that way. You know, they've been forced to move. You know, it's like, it's not been, you know, and it wouldn't be a choice for him. You know, it would be basically, you know, they would wear him down until ultimately the choice he had to make, you know, by coercion is that he has to get out of there.
Well, then now we're talking defending property with violence. Like, why would he resist violence if, you know, complying and appeasement is not working? Isn't he morally justified to defend himself against aggressors like them?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. I'm not saying he's not. I admire that he chooses not to use
Why?
Violence.
It seems like a stupid method. It's not working. You know, if he walked out there with an AK and said, you know, try it again with my apple trees, I dare you. I don't think he would have the same result as if, like, he's yes, I'll fill out your next form. Oh, okay, I'll get a lawyer to, you know, pay tens of thousands of dollars. He hired this Israeli surveyor, and then they sent him the bill.
Right. Yeah, I know. And I don't know if you read the part where his sister was saying that, you know, they basically feel like the Israeli government is trying to provoke them to violence. And that if they finally do get violent, then, you know, obviously then they would be, you know, taken down, and then it would be just another one of those.
Right.
Oh, look how violent the Palestinians are.
And, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's so. Such a bully tactic. I've seen that on the playground. Like, have you seen that where you know, it's like, you know, they're twitching some guy's nose, or they're just pushing some guy around, or just like trying to break a nerd or someone until the point where he's just about to snap. Mm-hmm. And then, like, they call over the teacher and then push him one more time, and he snaps, goes crazy. And then the teacher sees, oh my goodness, Billy the nerd is freaking out. He, you know, that's out of character.
Oh,
Billy,
yeah.
To the principal's office with you.
Well, that is a bully. Yeah, it's a bully
exactly
tactic.
A bully tactic. That is what the Israeli government is doing to this poor farmer.
Yeah.
Well, what would be the right solution? What's the right solution for Billy the nerd or for Dahar Nassar the farmer? What should they be doing?
Yeah.
What would you do?
Well, that's a very good question.
Shouldn't the school lessons apply in real life later on? So whatever the right thing to do on the playground would be the right thing for him to do. And the right thing on the playground, in my opinion, would be to keep your chin up. Don't allow aggressors to change who you are. Don't let them change your behavior and let you lose control over your emotions and your peace. Hold that inner peace. And it sounds like that's what Dahar is doing. He's saying, I will plant more trees, double trees. And he's just being peaceful on his own land. So now it'll be clear to anyone who sees what's happening that the Israeli government is flicking his nose continually, trying to provoke him to violence, and he's not going to react.
Yeah, and he's there, and if he continues to do that, I don't know. I mean, this is one article on the BBC.com, you know, website, but you know, I mean, who knows? I mean, if he continues to do that and he continues to hold out, you know, maybe more attention will be paid to this. You know, I just kind of found this on Google as I was, trying to find more information about what's going on over there, and this came up. But I don't know how many people, you know, see this.
Yeah.
But, I definitely want to, like, you know, acknowledge the source. And it was BBC, and it was written by Daniel Silas Adamson of Bethlehem. And
Bethlehem?
I think it says Bethlehem.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's always weird to me when stories are written, like, in Bethlehem. Like,
yeah.
I grew up in church, so whenever, you know, you hear about Bethlehem, it's like, wait, didn't just one thing happen there ever, and then we've moved on? Post-history, nothing more can happen.
Yeah. a lot is going on over there, actually. Bethlehem is, there was something else I was reading about Bethlehem, and I don't remember exactly.
Isn't that where Jesus was born?
Supposedly, yes.
Okay, that's what they tell us.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully this farmer, Dahar Nassar, can be an inspiration to all people of the Middle East and set a good example for peace.
Yeah.
Worms.
Yeah, hopefully. Worms.
Rare.
Rare.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolfe. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Palestinians, Gaza, and Ron Paul is not cool. Tell us more, Diana. We were talking in the last segment about a Christian farmer and how he is peacefully resisting the bullies that continue to flick his nose.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to add to that is, one of the things that I found is that there's actually a huge Jewish resistance to what Israel is currently doing. Inside and outside of Israel, as a matter of fact, there's a group called the Jewish Voice for Peace. I'm not sure if you're aware of that, but I follow them and they post a lot of good things. The other thing is that I've seen, protests by actual rabbis, Orthodox rabbis, saying that we're not Zionists. I saw them burning the Israeli flag. That was really cool to see them doing that.
Wow.
Yeah.
This was a group of rabbis?
A group of rabbis burning the Israeli flag.
Is this on video?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'll see if I can find it.
The internet is so magic.
I love it.
We can find videos of Jewish rabbis in Israel burning the Israeli flag.
I don't think it was actually in Israel.
Yeah, that would be a whole other level.
Yeah, they would have been arrested.
Yeah.
But
have you seen some of the arrests of Palestinians at these pro-peace marches? Well, I guess everyone, on both sides gets arrested, but
yeah, I saw this one where some pro-Palestinian group were in protest by finding all of the products in a supermarket that were that the company that produces the products are pro-Israel,
right?
And putting them all into taking them all into shopping carts, and they got into a lot of trouble,
so that no one else could buy them.
Yeah, it was basically in protest.
Cool idea.
Don't buy these products.
That's disruptive. I like that.
Yeah, it is. It's quite disruptive.
I did that with Greenpeace one time. I went into a grocery store and mislabeled all their products.
Mislabeled them?
Yeah. Like instead of salmon $20 a pound or whatever, it said salmon, at the price of sea turtles.
Salmon that's the truth.
Yeah. At the price of polar bears or whatever the made up the made up environmental concern of the time.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think it is a clever way to culture jam to go right into where the people are affected, right? Good for them.
Well, there's that. There's also, I also read the argument, because one of the things I do is I'll read these articles and then I'll go and look at the comments. And there was a comment that said, you know, they're destroying private property.
Who is?
The protesters.
Well, you know, yeah. Are they destroying it?
Yeah, it was like they, you know, they were mishandling it or something like that, that they were doing something that they shouldn't do with private property.
Yeah, okay, so that's crossing a line there. I don't support that. Destroying property. I mean, I can understand them, like, informing people, bringing them more information. It's like adding a label to a package.
Yeah.
But when you destroy the package, you break it, you bought it.
Yeah, I don't know necessarily that they were destroying anything. I think, you know, one of the things that the point that they brought up was, you know, they were taking like refrigerated goods and putting them into carts and just leaving them out, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, so, that's clever, because that's technically allowed, right? That's just being a jerk.
I think you know, people do that all the time. You know, they pile their grocery carts full of you know, products from the grocery store, and then realize they don't have any money, and they just leave the cart there.
That's dumb. I'm sorry, but you know who that really hurts? It hurts the poor minimum wage stockers, people stocking the shelves. That doesn't translate back into Gaza or Israel. No. They're not hearing about the poor minimum wage clerk who had to restock shelves for an hour.
Yeah.
Thanks to the stupid protest.
Well, everybody can't be as informed as we are.
Well, they're trying. So, all right, any more on that? On Gaza? On Palestine? On Israel?
That's it for me.
All right, let's close that box.
Okay.
We'll let Pandora open that one again later. It's crazy what's going on over there in the Middle East. I just want to stay out of it. It's not my fight.
Yeah, it makes me sad. It just makes me really sad.
Well, if I were on the playground, I would take pictures of that bully getting attacked and hope that that would be helpful, but I'm staying away. Staying at a distance. Maybe we could do some reporting on it from the from far, far away, from an ocean away. All right, we'll be back with more Freedom Fiends.
Worms. Meow.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Michael Dean is away preparing for an all-you-can-eat bacon festival happening in Michigan. I think it's called the Peace, Love, Liberty, Michigan Bacon Contest.
Something like that, yeah.
Coming up soon.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of stuff we were talking about in the last segment. We went all over Gaza, Palestine, Israel, all the way to the minimum wage worker who has to deal with the annoying protesters leaving empty carts all along the aisles filled with produce and perishables, things that need to be refrigerated. Mm-hmm. How dare they?
Yeah, and then the ice cream melts.
Yeah, and I came across something earlier today that I just couldn't believe. I saw a photograph of a Walmart sign saying, now hiring. And that's not what's shocking. What's shocking was the pay associated with the following positions. Cashier, $17.40 an hour.
I'd do that.
Unloader, $17.40 an hour. Also hiring at that rate for apparel, electronics, meat, consumables, home lines. Oh, and an extra $2. Tire and lube technician, $19.90 an hour. These are at Walmart.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what gives? I've never seen Walmart pay that much. When I saw this sign, I said, this has to be a joke, or it must be priced, you know, they made a mistake with the pricing, or it's in another currency. It's not actually dollars. You know, maybe they were using Argentinian francs or whatever they use there. So, but no, that's not the case.
Yeah.
This is from the Bakken oil fields of North Dakota, where the jobless rate is 0.9%.
That's incredible.
Walmart is paying 2.5 times the minimum wage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to hire anyone.
Yeah, that's the point. I couldn't believe it until that fact sunk in. It was that they have to hire these people at that rate because they could do anything else. There's so much employment in this area.
Right.
I had heard rumors about Williston, North Dakota, where the Bakken oil fields are enriching seemingly everyone in the neighborhood. But I had no idea it was like this, and that it was affecting other businesses like Walmart. You would think it would be what, like, Walmart is one of those companies that everyone just says, oh, they always pay as little as possible. So this teaches a few economic lessons, I think.
Absolutely.
And there's an article that really breaks this down over at AEIideas.org. That's the website for the American Enterprise Institute. And Mark J. Perry writes, I took this photo today at the Walmart in Williston, North Dakota, where the economy is booming thanks to the gusher of shale oil being pumped from the prolific Bakken oil fields. Daily oil production in the Bakken is approaching 1 million barrels per day, placing it in an elite group of only 10 supergiant oil fields in the world. Okay, so we get the point. This is a big deal for energy.
Right.
But the economic lessons that it conveys. Walmart pays wages that reflect the economic conditions in a local market based on supply and demand of the labor market. Like you said, they have to pay this much or they wouldn't have employees.
Right. Yeah. It goes on to say that Walmart can't really set wages independent of market forces, and it's at the mercy of the market in every local community. People don't understand that. They don't get that.
Well, I think they don't want to admit it either, that that in my community, no one is worth paying more than what the state mandates they be paid.
I mean, that's right.
That's pretty sad. Like, hey, if Walmart's paying minimum wage where you live, you're not worth paying. Sorry.
Yeah.
The fact that Walmart is paying 2.5 times the minimum wage in Williston, North Dakota, is evidence that a single national minimum wage for every city, county, and labor market in the country can't possibly make sense. Even proponents of the minimum wage have to agree that a single national minimum can't be optimal for every labor market in the country. In that case, they would logically have to support thousands of minimum wages tailored to thousands of local communities, and even more locally agree that minimum wages are unworkable. Well, that's true. They're going to have to face that reality.
Yeah. Well, have to, and in the reality, will we actually, or will they? Not we. We're smart. They're not.
Well, they'll have to, because it won't make economic sense.
They'll figure that out.
They'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Number three listed on this lessons from the Bakken oil fields and the Walmart and the surrounding area. You probably won't be hearing anyone calling for a $15 an hour living wage in North Dakota, since the entry level wages at Walmart there already start above that. So, yeah, I would love to. This is my number one argument that I'm going to bring up to anyone who's calling for a living wage. Whenever I hear that term, I'm going to remember this story. Just say, right. Oh, think about in North Dakota, where the Walmart entry-level employees are making close to $20 an hour.
Yeah, it makes me wonder what other companies in the area are paying.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, they must be. I was thinking of moving out here, Diana. I was like, oh, they're paying how much? Okay, well, why don't I visit for a little while, stay with a friend, and then make some bank, right? Shouldn't everyone be doing this? Is this the California gold rush, but happening in North Dakota?
That right, could be. Yeah.
But then I considered rent would probably be through the roof.
Yeah, more than likely.
If people are coming in droves to go work for $20 an hour Walmart jobs, can you imagine what the rent must be? I mean, I would assume it's pretty high with the influx of workers, again, with supply and demand.
Right.
All right, so what's the next lesson that we learn here? The energy sector is the strongest sector of the U.S. economy and is bringing wealth, prosperity, and high-paying jobs to places like Western North Dakota and South Central and Western Texas.
Yeah, that's interesting about Texas because one of the things that I've noticed about Texas, my dad lives there. I have family that live in Texas, and their cost of living is really not very high at all.
Yeah, Houston is one of the lowest cost of living major metropolitan areas in the U.S.
Right. Yeah.
It's one of the most affordable cities.
Yeah. I was, you know, in San Antonio, I was noticing that the rents and things like that were comparable to here, you know, if not a little bit less. And when I say here, North Carolina, I'm in North Carolina, people.
Hey.
So, hey.
How is North Carolina holding up?
North Carolina, it's okay. I mean, the area where I'm in is fine. I'm in the Triangle region, which is Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill, and we're doing, you know, this area is doing fairly well economically speaking. But you know, the taxes, they're not as bad as, say, you know, like New York or California, but you know, property taxes are pretty high here. It's interesting, the gasoline tax is through the roof compared to neighboring states. And
why?
And I don't know. it's
crooked
state
politicians.
I know exactly. It's state and federal.
Yeah.
So
sounds like somewhere along the line there was some crooked politician. But yeah.
That's usually the culprit.
Hey, well, how's the supermoon looking from where you are? Have you checked it out yet?
I have not tonight.
That's right now.
I was sleeping before the show, and I can't see it from my window right now.
You've blocked out the sky. How sad. Well,
we might have clouds. It's been cloudy here for a couple of days.
So, well, anyway, that was my story about Walmart. I thought that was pretty amazing that they're paying close to $20 an hour. So it totally blows out of the water anyone's argument that Walmart's not interested in paying people a reasonable rate for what they're worth. Walmart's absolutely worth ready to pay what you're worth. And if you're making money for them, they're going to compensate you for that. If you're worth $20 an hour, they're going to pay that.
Right.
Yeah. They're making it.
And it is, you know, working at places like Walmart or McDonald's, I mean, these are places where people can kind of start their working, you know, I guess, career, so to speak.
Gosh, where do you go after that, though? I mean, if you're making $20 an hour at Walmart, where do you leave to?
Well, like we were saying, the wages at you know, and I don't know, you know, how big the area is. I mean, obviously, it's got the big the oil fields and everything, and I don't know like what other options there are in terms of places to work. But I would imagine there are places there that pay even more than that. So that would be your you know, that would be what you would aspire to, I would imagine.
So you want to hear why Ron Paul's not cool anymore, Diana?
Yeah, I really want to hear that.
Yeah, I've been teasing this for a little while, and I used to be down with the Ron Paul. I was really cool with that. I thought that he was, I don't know, the James Dean, or I don't know who's a cool guy, like Elvis. He was the Elvis of liberty.
Yeah, I read an article in New York Times recently that compared Ron Paul to the Nirvana of liberty, and I'm like, yeah, Nirvana.
Yeah. And the person who wrote that, if I remember correctly, has a great deal of credibility because that was Kennedy, from one of the former VJs on MTV, who knew a thing or two about bands and Nirvana. So, yeah, Ron Paul compared to Nirvana, I'm going to say no. And here's why. This article really breaks down beautifully, and it's written by Stephen Schaefer over at Liberty.me. He says, let's say your city is terrorized by a local mafia. All right, can you picture this?
Yes.
You're in your local city. You're in Raleigh. I'm here in Keene, and there's a local mafia. A real cut-your-toes-off kind, not the kind you're thinking of. The kind that goes out from time to time and kills people who don't comply. Sometimes women and children.
That sounds like the police.
Well, it's a different kind of mafia. Just go with it.
Okay.
Picture it in your mind's eye.
I got it.
And then you got this friend. You got this friend, you see. He says he's going to fix the mafia. He's going to make it all better. Turn it around. I think you can see where this is going.
Oh, yeah.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Mafia.
Yeah, that's not good.
But your friend Don Saul says, hey,
Don Saul.
I'm going to fix the mafia. I'm going to turn them into a charitable organization. Oh, you say, but Don, wouldn't it be easier to just start a charity or to fight the mafia? But he waves his hand and says, I got this. Well, you might be a bit skeptical at first, but Don seems like a good guy. He's obviously a smart fella. And heck, he claims to be pro-tiny mafia. Great! Now, a year...
Sounds good to me so far!
Hey, no. What could go wrong?
Right.
Now, a year passes...
Just a little mafia, just a little bit.
Well, I'm pro-tiny mafia. Who wouldn't be? I want the tiniest mafia possible. Now, you've helped Don out over this last year, but you've noticed that he's hanging out more and more with the other mafiosos. But on the other hand... He often debates about the size of the mafia, claiming it could be smaller, and you could agree. Life would be better with a smaller mafia. He continues to claim that he will create a smaller mafia, so you keep supporting him. Another year passes, and you start to get suspicious. Not only has the mafia not gotten any smaller, it's actually gotten bigger. Not only that, but it's getting more aggressive and more violent. You gotta tell Don. Don, hearing your concerns, waves his hand once again and with a twinkle in his eye says, no, no, we will make the mafia smaller. I just need more support and more, financing.
Of course.
You want a smaller government, and heck... Don was a baby dentist, for goodness sake, so how bad could he be? You hand over a couple of bucks and tell all your friends how great Don Saul is. You even buy a bumper sticker and happily place it on your bumper. Another year passes, and the bloodshed is now daily. Mothers weep for the loss of their children. People are losing hope. Life is getting worse. Fast. Don, you promised to make this better. You said that you would make the mafia smaller, but it's larger than ever. Surely you are directly responsible for this, but this isn't working. Don looks down with his chin in his hand and ponders that for a second, you've brought up a good point. A minute later, he looks up and says, "You're right, but we will make the mafia smaller, and I really guarantee it. I just need more support. I need more funding." Your guts say no, but he looks sincere. He's saying everything you want to hear, and it's not like he's making his living doing this, so why would he act against the evidence? He must know what he's doing. Another year passes, and once again things are worse. You go to Don and say, "What happened?" "I quit," he responds. "But my son..." And this is a cautionary tale by Schaefer's at Liberty.me, because this is exactly what has happened with the icon Ron Paul. He's not cool. And he used to be everyone's Liberty baby daddy. So happy that, you know, everyone's fawning over him. He could do no wrong whenever he was on the TV or the national spotlight. People were just happy whenever he said something pro-Liberty. Well, at least he's getting the message out there. Well, have we seen any measurable impact? I mean, aside from people saying, "Yay, I'm more aware of the ideas of Liberty," that's great. But his goal was not that. It was to reduce the size of government, and he failed. So if people are like, "Oh, yay, I know about Liberty," well, then we have lots of people to thank for that. There's no guarantee you wouldn't have known about Liberty if Ron Paul never existed. So anyway, Ron Paul was a huge influence to me, but I am disappointed with his ability to reduce the size of government. He promised to do that, and like all politician promises, it was a lie.
that's the unfortunate thing. I was talking about this the other night with on the Fiends with Michael Dean regarding Ron Paul and how basically, you know, anybody that gets into office, I mean, it just kind of ends up the same way or worse.
He's a hack. They're all hacks.
Yeah.
I mean, you say politicians go in it for the right reasons, but aren't they all seeking power? And isn't power that which corrupts?
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
The show's so weird. We meow and then we talk about war.
Who started the meowing?
I don't know. I like it. We can't stop though.
I know.
We can't. It's like war. Hey, but speaking of, there are two war stories that are related by the fact that they involve 72 hours. So the first is that Obama broadened the goals in Iraq. We sort of mentioned this at the beginning, that Obama announced military airstrikes in northern Iraq to, I don't know, bring peace. And this is not a military action, apparently.
No, of course not. War planes, nah.
Right. And so that's 72 hours from time of announcing like invasion, for lack of a better term, or for right. announcing the strikes, mm-hmm. to announcing the new goal. So, like, the goal is always shifting. It's a moving goalpost, and yeah. this always happens in wars where it's like, well, here's what we're gonna do, and here's our goals that we're looking to achieve, and then like that just sort of gets ignored after a little while, and then they choose a new goal. Well, they've been choosing so many new goals within just a 72-hour period. Hear this from antiwar.com. President Obama's goals in Iraq continue to grow every time he gives a speech, and the yeah. shifting sands are giving hawks more ammo in their constant push to escalate the new U.S. war as much and as quickly as possible. Obama's goals have gone from protecting Erbil to protecting Erbil and Baghdad, and now to prevent the creation of an Islamic caliphate in Iraqi territory, as well as keeping all strategic sites in the nation from ISIS control. Is your head spinning?
Pretty much.
That's
yeah.
a big shift, and in only about 72 hours since he announced the war. Mm-hmm. Oh, but of course, some this retired general, Carter Ham, he was on the news today insisting that the goals in Iraq are too difficult. They only have 108 warplanes, you know. That's like literally what he said. And it will require... Yeah, we only have 108 warplanes. It's going to require troops on the ground, he says. Well, wouldn't a retired general know?
Yeah.
President Obama has insisted that troops on the ground aren't being considered, but the credibility of that claim is very much in doubt, given that 2,000 U.S. Marines already sanctioned just offshore... And the Air Force analyst saying 15,000 ground troops will be needed just to support the current air war, which the administration insists will be a long campaign. So there are going to be troops back in Iraq. That's the bottom yeah. line. They're trying to weasel out of the wording as much as possible. But let's give it to them straight, Diana. There's going to be troops in Iraq. Isn't that so?
Yeah, I think the chances are very good for that.
It's weird to me, too, because as an anarchist, I would say, you know, hey, not my war. You want to go fight it? Go ahead. I'm not mm-hmm. going to stop you, but just don't make me support it.
Right.
But that's convenient for me to say when I don't think that wars would be fought. But then again, for a war like this, 15,000 ground troops, they could find that. They could find that in volunteers. There are going to be plenty of young men who or women who are ready to go and fight for any authority figure who tells them to do so and puts a gun in their hand, right?
I don't know. I think that most people that join the military don't necessarily do so thinking that they're going to have to go fight a war, which is kind of ignorant. But
you think that?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll have to do some informal polling. Because yeah. I would estimate that most people who sign up for the military, they get turned on by those images that they see in the pamphlets. They say, oh, yeah, I want to be in a foxhole or whatever they call them, those trenches.
Whatever. They want to be there. Like,
helmet.
Yeah.
They want to be in the thick of the fight on the front
right.
lines.
They want to shoot people.
Send me in, Sarge.
Well, I definitely think there are some that are like that for sure, but I don't think it's the majority. I think okay. the majority just want to get paid.
That's comforting. I think that's, I can agree with that. It's probably yeah. most people are just like, oh, you'll pay me to hold a gun? All right, I'll do that.
Right,
you'll pay me to sit at a register? Okay, I'll do that. So yeah. most people just respond to incentives, right?
Right, yeah. And the military gives very, very strong incentives. You know, they'll pay for your college. You know, you'll basically, you know, if you're in long enough to earn the GI Bill, that, you know, your college can be paid for. You know, they take very good care of you while you're in there. once you're out, you know, it's all, yeah, it just depends.
From what I've heard, veterans don't get very good treatment once they're out of the military.
Yeah. It depends. It really does depend. My dad's a veteran.
Yeah, but I hear about those VA hospitals. They're always a nightmare.
Yeah, they really are. And, you know, I can't... My dad retired as an officer in the Air Force. He was in for 25 years. So he's definitely one that would not have to, deal with that, probably.
Did he speak out against government health care, government control of health care? Because he gets to see it firsthand.
Veterans
are the first ones to get universal health care, right? Because they get government care.
How's
that working out?
The elderly and all of that kind of stuff. Oh, his is fine. I mean, he doesn't go to a VA hospital. He lives right near an Air Force base, and that's where he goes when he needs to go to the doctor.
I see.
So, yeah, I mean, he actually does get very good care. I really do think it depends, and I'm not sure what the different, why some veterans get such poor care and others don't. I really don't. I don't know, why that's the case.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
But he gets a nice pension and everything. So,
hey, speaking of veterans and people who have nice pensions, Senator John McCain is pushing for this war. Big surprise.
Warhawk. Really?
Yeah.
But of course.
What's strange about that is that he's actually pictured with some of these terrorists, isn't he? Wasn't he taking pictures with some of the rebel factions in Syria not long ago?
Really?
Yeah.
I don't recall that. I haven't seen anything about that.
Yeah, like just a couple of months or a year ago or something, there's like a picture of him hanging out with some of these terrorists. Because what's weird about the Middle East situation in the U.S. and all the empires that go in there is that they're on different sides of the same war all the time. Like, I'm no war historian, but I have learned that during the Gulf War, the U.S. was supporting the people who they're currently fighting.
Right.
So, what's up with that?
Yeah. And we were supporting the Afghanistan and the Mujahideen against the Russians. And then Osama bin Laden just so happened to be one of those Mujahideen who later, supposedly orchestrated 9/11.
Whoops.
So, yeah, I know.
So
he was being paid by the CIA.
Oh, how could we have known? Well,
It's all a big mess, and I recently saw the movie again, 1984. And if you haven't seen it lately, you should watch it again,
or read the book.
Or read the book. I'm speaking to the listeners too, because it's an eye opener when you compare the book to what is happening now. It's wow.
Yeah, favorite throwback for 1984 is Big Brother on the telescreens talking doublespeak. Because when I hear a politician like Obama say that this is not military, but there are going to be military airstrikes,
right.
I'm like, wow, that could not be more doublespeak. I mean, you are literally saying the opposite of what you're saying in the same sentence. It's two completely conflicting ideas.
And their wars were, you're constantly fighting, different people that were, were once your friends are now your enemies. And
we've always been at war with East Asia, Diana.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that's true. Oh, right. I forgot.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
We've always been at war with them. It's not like we were on the opposite side of this war just 20, 30 years ago. Well, okay, so I teased this segment saying that there are two stories out of the Middle East that relate to 72 hours. Here's the other one. Israel and Palestinians agree to a new 72-hour Gaza ceasefire. Hooray!
Yay!
Yay! Yay! For peace talks.
And there was much rejoicing.
Yeah, there is much rejoicing. There's rejoicing here. And that's not tongue-in-cheek at all. I want more ceasefires. Ceasefires.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's cease that fire right now. Mm-hmm. Maybe Obama can learn a lesson from this. Egypt has announced that they have successfully brokered a new ceasefire in the Gaza Strip, scheduled to begin at midnight tonight, local time. So it's already begun, just 2.5 hours. Well, I guess a little earlier over there. The deal will see Israel returning negotiators to Cairo to resume peace talks. Yay! Peace talks! I'm happy about this. Israeli negotiators had left the Cairo talks late Friday, with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu saying no negotiations could take place so long as the fighting continues. Israel later agreed to an unconditional return to the talks, but escalated their attacks to try and get more targets hit before the ceasefire begins. Oh, that is so lame. What a bunch of bullies. I mean, that is, to bring back to the playground visual. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is like the teacher is walking over there, and you know that this issue is about to be resolved. You're about to go to peer mediation or whatever the high school equivalent of this bully resolution system would be, these peace talks, this ceasefire.
Mm-hmm.
And you like give the kid a wedgie right before
right
before the teacher shows up. Like, oh, she's coming. Like, and then throwing the kid in the locker. Like, oh, here you go. Here's one last punch, kid.
Right. Or a head in the toilet or something like that.
Yeah, it's one last hurrah before he knows that, like, I mean, that ceasefire, it becomes meaningless when you're getting your last kicks in, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It just seems weak. Don't come to the table when you don't mean it. Palestinian negotiators said their agreement to the ceasefire was entirely conditional on Israel's promise to return to the talks. The previous ceasefire held for 72 hours, but Hamas declined an extension when Israel refused to make any agreements in principle on any of the terms of final peace that they were trying to negotiate. Well, if you're not going to give anything, you're not going to get anything. Sorry.
It's just such a mess.
Maybe they could just continue having these ceasefires and just keep doing that for the rest of all time.
Yeah, back-to-back ceasefires. Come on, people.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hi, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. The internet has lowered the cost barrier for a worldwide radio show to a price approaching zero. Yet there is one arena where you still need thousands of dollars to approach the audio quality of the corporate media. Doing a live spoken show with more than one host in different geographic locations. Our program, Fiend Phone, will solve that problem, and it will be given away free. Go to fiendphone.com to see what you can do to help. That's FEENPHONE.com.
Wow, Freedom Fiend. Fiends. Well, we did it tonight without Michael. We hope he gets a speedy recovery from his bacon-eating contest.
Yeah, bacon-eating, rewriting Twilight Zone / Outer Limits.
He'll recover. He'll recover soon enough. But we've been, hopefully, calming the hamster in your brain. And talking about some of the serious stuff. We got a little serious tonight, Diana. We should shake that out.
Yeah.
Shake it out.
Yeah, I know. Shake it. Whew. Okay.
Yeah. Because, you know, life's too short to take things so seriously.
That's right.
You know, it occurs to me that with all this war talk, we should bring up that Costa Rica doesn't even have an army. Did you know that?
I did not know that until tonight.
It's like a popularly known fact, but it's something I didn't know for a long time until my brother moved there. And I've got a little blurb on that. I think it's worth sharing with the people. After fighting a bloody civil war in 1948 that killed 2,000 people, Costa Rica decided to abolish the army that year. Despite all the conflicts that have occurred in Central America since then, Costa Rica has managed to remain virtually untouched compared with its neighbors. Not having a standing military has contributed heavily to that peace. So, you know, we all know that what's been going on over the last 50, 60 years in Latin America, coups and governments rewriting borders, changing leadership. But Costa Rica continues unchanged. Just a wonderful place to vacation, friendly people, moderate economy.
I want to live there.
Yeah. It sounds like a wonderful place to live.
Yeah.
And having no military, I know a lot of people say, well, they would just get invaded. But that's not happening. That hasn't happened to Costa Rica. And it seems like a place worth invading. If you wanted to conquer a nice place,
right.
Some ocean property.
Yeah, beautiful coasts on both sides, on Pacific and Atlantic.
Right. So yeah. The U.S. is not unique in this. I would argue that the U.S. doesn't need a military if it works for Costa Rica. I know some could say it's apples and oranges, but I think it would be harder to invade a country that doesn't have a military.
Well, do the Swiss have a standing military?
Yeah, they always have.
Oh, okay.
The Swiss have like a heavily armed, regulated military. Like the Israelis, they have to join. It's like you're required to join the military in Switzerland.
Sort I know they're well armed. I know that the citizens are well armed there.
Yeah, because the government gives them all their guns. The government's like, here's some free guns. Yeah. Protect this place. That's their welfare scheme. Well, hey, we talked about a lot of great stuff tonight.
Yeah.
Some peaceful cop blocking of the protests outside of Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
Some accountability there. And I think we decided that we would both give our names, even though we don't have to. We don't have to give our names. We can keep our privacy, but we're going to give it away for accountability's sake, right?
That's right. Yeah. I really don't mind. And right here sitting in my living room, all safe and warm, I'll be happy to give my name.
Well, yeah.
No qualms about it.
I don't know what people are afraid of.
Yeah, you know? I know. I mean, I think that I would go ahead and give my name. But you know, if I'm single and my daughter is grown up and out of the house and I don't really have anyone to support but myself, you know, I don't have as much to lose, I guess.
I don't know. I'd be ashamed to not give my name. I'd be ashamed that someone would look up and say, like, well, you stood for this. Why didn't you go all the way?
Yeah.
Let people approach you with it. Plus, Walmart leading by example.
Yeah.
Paying people 2.5 times the national average. Oh, and Ron Paul is so not cool. Tell your friends.
Walmart's just making good economic decisions.
Right.
In the labor market where they are in back in Fields, North Dakota.
They're changing things. They're changing things for freedom. They're giving people an example to look to when they say, those corporate fat cats don't want to pay a fair living wage. Yes,
you sound
they
just
do.
Like Michael Dean when you did that.
Our corporate fat cats.
That's right. Well, that escalated quickly. We'll be back with more fiends. Worms.
Worms.